is you interlock the two.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer and the fifth.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
Cool.
We're good?
Yep.
Are you recording?
Yes, we're recording.
We're rolling.
Yeah, we're rolling.
Okay. Well, hello and welcome to Full Reptile.
Just point your mic down a little bit.
Hold on.
We're rolling.
Should we start again?
Yeah, go on then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we rolling?
Yes, we're rolling.
We're rolling. Hello and welcome to Full Reptile Radio, episode 14.
14, yeah. Yeah.
How you doing, man? Good week?
Yes, good week, man. Yeah. Really good week. The weather's slightly picking up now. Although you were just saying...
What is happening?
Yeah.
It's June.
It's June and I'm still having to wear like slippers and a dressing gown, yeah.
Mate, I sat waiting for the kids yesterday in school or outside school in the car. And it was like some sort of catfish sun moment that because I'm sat in a bowl, I got so hot in the car and I was like, fuck, this is
like
nice.
Peekaboo sun.
Yeah, for real. I took my hoodie off, got out of the car, stripped off, chucked that into the car, walked to the playground. And I don't know what it is, if anyone else experiences this with their kids, but my daughter is the last out every day.
All right.
Literally tumbleweeds going past, every fucker's gone, caretakers locking the gates. And I'm like, all right. She goes, yeah. I was just handing in my raffle tickets. I don't understand it, but I was like, cool. But I was freezing.
Yeah.
Fucking freezing, like down to my bones. And I'd been stood in there for about, I don't know, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. But I don't know if it's because I've been sat boiling in a car and then sat freezing. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't feel like June.
No, not yet. No, not yet. It's meant to actually be really nice this weekend though, isn't it? Like 27 degrees or something on Saturday.
I don't trust shit, man. And I never, ever, ever look at the weather and I never trust it when I read it.
Yeah, just, I always judge it by waking up and looking outside.
Out the window. Yeah.
that's my day.
That's shit. It's like, if we ever go to Alton Towers or anything as a family, Stace would be looking into it for like months before and just go, well, that day, yeah, it says it's going to be good. And I'm like, yo, we're going to be going no matter what.
Mm.
Don't fucking panic.
Turn up in a pair of shorts, but it's 3 foot of snow.
Yeah, fuck it. It's all good, man. Like literally the car's big enough to put 3 different changes of clothes in it if you want.
Mm.
Put them in. Like literally my main thing now, we used to carry picnics and bags and you fucking name it. We probably take one rucksack now and it's got a couple of drinks in it, a couple of satsumas or bananas or some shit. But then I've normally got all the other stuff in the car. So the kids have got like big blankets and spare clothes and comfy joggers and weird, but it's like a 45 minutes away. Mm. So they have they just get comfy and just sit and chill out and have a drink on their own. But before we used to take so much shit. Whereas now I look out the window, I'm like, that'd be all right.
Easy, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Easy, fuck it. But yeah, I mean, did you say you've, what did you have done?
Oh, right, yes. Oh, so yeah, my week's not been that great, to be honest. I had an abscess come up on my tooth.
Ooh.
Yes, no, Monday. And for the first... The thing is, because a lot of the dentists are going private now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I used to be registered with like NHS and stuff and had a dentist. You could just ring them up and book it. Yeah, because it was an emergency, I had to like pay extra and it's like privatised and what now, so... It was a bit.
Did it feel different? Did you feel all like fancy schmants and like get a
no? I felt like I was doing some dodgy deal because when I turned up, she was like, "Oh, you got to pay me before the appointment." So I handed over like cash, and I was just sat there. I've just paid this woman some money, and I've not even had anything done yet.
It's kind of fucked.
It was like backwards. It felt more like shady than before.
I'm private. We don't trust you.
Yeah, but. No, yeah, I had an abscess. It's like my wisdom tooth, man. I don't know if anyone suffers with it, but it flares up every now and again.
Oh, shit.
And what it is, it's because like the tooth's like submerged in your gum. It's not like fully grown out.
Yeah.
Like when you're eating over time and stuff, like stuff gets stuck in there and whatnot, and it flares up.
Ooh.
And yeah, I had an abscess and I was fucking agony, man.
Mate.
Like Tuesday, Wednesday, because I rang up and initially they couldn't get me in. So she was like, I'll ring back tomorrow and we could probably get you on a cancellation or anything. So I was just like, all right, fuck it. I was looking for an emergency dentist, but couldn't find any that would get me in.
So you had to suck it up and pay.
Yeah, so I was just like, kind of had an ice pack on my face, or like, no, I wasn't, I didn't have an ice pack, but I had like ice cubes, like, I was just eating ice cubes because it was just
wrecking.
Was it doing
that thing where it was adjusting the shape of your mouth, so you're constantly either biting your tongue or biting your
kind lip? Of, yeah, but I was like chewing on one side, but also my like this side of my face, it's not that bad today, but like Tuesday and Wednesday, my face was like super swollen. So I was like kind of like dribbling and shit, which wasn't very attractive. But
it's when I got here and you said, I've had an abscess removed.
Yeah, and I just swallowed about 5 painkillers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I stood there and you're just popping these pills out. I'm like, are we in a suicide pact? Or is it just, that's what we're doing today? They might be supplements out of a paracetamol box. But I'll never forget, I must have been, I was about 15. So my brother would have been about 8. So at my mum's, I had my sister from, so there's me and my sister are the originals, my mum and dad. So then my mum married Stuart and had Will. And my dad and Rain got married and had Danny and Rich. So I had 2 brothers at my dad's, 1 brother at my mum's. And it was weird because obviously the weekends I'd normally spend at my dad's. And Will was a bit of a shit house because he had the house to himself. My mum would do a big shop on a Friday. And we, as you know, we weren't well off, but if she was buying fizzy drinks or biscuits, they'd be like maybe 1 packet of Penguins or Kit Kats or Viscounts or some shit like that, that once it's gone, it's gone. And like, you can't just go and grab 6 and just fucking nail it. So often we'd get back from my dad's from a weekend and he's nailed the lemonade and nailed all the biscuits. Like, you get back and there might be half a digestive, or if you remember choc dips.
Oh yeah.
Well, he'd do this thing where he'd eat
the white
chocolate
ones were the best.
Oh mate, they're the business. And I still got trauma from them because he would eat the chocolate and like dash the biscuits into the biscuit barrel as in like an exchange. So.
I used to do it where I would use the smallest amount of chocolate on the sticks.
To then. Yeah. Oh no, he'd just exchange all of his biscuits to eat 2 or 3 of the chocolates,
right,
which is a bit shitty. But nevertheless, just brothers being brothers. And I can remember getting back from my dad's once and we'd found, like a couple of weeks before, a whole sleeve of Penguins down the side of his bed. So even though he was saying, yeah, they're all gone, he was hoarding. And we were like, okay. So we got a bit suspicious. And
he's got a fresh joke every day. I wonder where it's come from.
Yeah. Where have these weird Penguin wrappers? Like, he's just nailing the jokes. And we gets back and it was normally about 6 o'clock, half 6 when I got in. And obviously I haven't seen him all weekend. So we go and play football or do whatever. And he was being a bit shady and acting a bit moochy. And he caught me and he had a big lump here on his cheek. And I was like, what have you got? Because obviously we want, like, everything was fair game to share. And I was like, have you got sweets? And he was like, no. I was like, yes, you have. What the fuck is in your mouth? He's like, nothing. And he didn't say, stop, it's an abscess, I'm in pain. So I just grabbed his face.
Oh, man.
And squeezed the lump as hard as I could because I thought it was like a boiled sweet. And he hit the floor and made a sound I've never heard before or since. And he was just writhing around the floor, crying at, an abscess in my tooth. And I was like, oh, fuck. But I still kind of didn't believe him. I was like, open your mouth, show me. And so, yeah, so my only experience with abscesses was essentially flooring my brother because I thought he was lying to me about having boiled sweets.
It is one of, it's like, it's not really like a, it's just constant ache, pain, like, because it's in your head as well. It like almost gives you a little bit of a headache.
Yeah.
And it like yesterday, because when I actually went to the dentist and he said, oh, well, you've not got infection or anything. It's just if it flares up again, then we'll have to take the tooth out. But he basically drained the abscess. And but afterwards, because when I got there, it kind of dull, the pain was quite dull.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, maybe it's feeling a little bit better. Why have I paid 55 quid already? Yeah. But
see it through.
But then, yeah, when he drained it and stuff, and then afterwards, because it was like aggravated and my painkillers had like worn off.
Yeah.
I was just driving back like, oh my God.
It's the worst.
It was fucking horrible, man. But yeah, it's feeling a bit better today.
Well, I haven't ever had one filling. And I can remember the dentist saying to me, when I've injected you, it's going to numb your mouth. Don't try and bite your tongue or your lip. And obviously the first thing you do is you're like, honestly, he's like, you won't be able to whistle and you're going to struggle drinking water. I was like, fuck off. And honestly, it was like, I don't know, just the most surreal experience, because I'd got to like, I don't know, 20 something, never had a fill-in. And then I was just more fascinated by the fact that half my face isn't working anymore. So I was going, trying to whistle. I look like Timmy off of fucking, oh, is it Jimmy?
Timmy.
It was one of them. And then I bit my tongue so hard that I put a crease down it. And honestly, it took so long to fucking heal.
Yeah.
Because I was just being if I got my kids now and they had a fill-in and I said to them, don't bite your tongue, and they did, I'd be devastated and fuming because they didn't listen. Whereas the dentist told me as an adult, don't do this. And I was like, no, let me just test it.
Mm.
And yeah, I nearly bit off my tongue off.
Well, it's weird because I've never had a fill-in. I've never had anything wrong with my teeth up until like this, really. But it's only because it's a wisdom tooth and it's not fully like coming through. The rest are fine. It's just this side. And but I've never had anything, so I've always had a little bit of a fear of like
how bad is it
going to
be.
You just feel very vulnerable in the dentist chair. Yeah. Like you're not tied down or anything, but because you know you have to be there, and there's people like fiddling around in your mouth, and it's attached to your head. It's just like there's a vulnerability that you don't get any.
You've got to kind of be brave, haven't you? Is that
like I've had tattoos and shit. Like people have stuck needles in me, like drawn ink into my skin, yet I'm scared of a little tiny needle in my gum.
It is strange because by the time it's the anticipation, isn't it?
Mm.
Anticipation of most things is like if you knew someone's going to come and punch you in the face at 2:30, you wouldn't sleep for a couple of days. But you know, if you went training and you know you're probably going to get cracked, it's you have to ignore it.
And
it's similar, I suppose, to like the dentist or even tattoos.
Mm.
I'm covered, and it's normally 2 or 3 minutes into the next one I have that I always think to myself, what the fuck am I doing?
Mm.
Like, don't get me wrong, I love them and I love having them, but I kind of wish you could Starship Troopers them, you know, where it just sort of went zzz, and it's on. You know?
Yeah, that's cool. It's like, what is it? It's like a difference between like a rational fear and an irrational fear.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
everyone's scared of a lion because it's, you know, you know you're going to get mauled.
Yeah.
But like not everyone's scared of moths.
Yeah.
It's like the you don't know what, it's a phobia, isn't it?
Yeah.
But like you can't really like justify why you are scared of it.
No, it is difficult because it affects you in such a weird way. And like you said, because you've not experienced it, because you've been so good and you've looked after your teeth, that ultimately you've not paid the benefit because at the end of it, you're still scared.
I've gone 30 years strong and then now someone's sticking a needle down my throat. Yeah.
Mate, weird. But feeling better now?
Yeah, loads better. Yeah. The painkillers have kicked in, so it's cool.
Good. So if you don't remember any of this, and like you text me in the morning, go, do you want to record today? I'm like, dude, just go on your Mac and have a look. We did an hour yesterday.
But yeah, no. Besides that, it was good. We should talk about some fights, maybe.
Did you watch the fights? Did you watch Kai?
I only watched the main event.
Okay.
Because there was so much controversy around it, of course, with the decision. And in my opinion, I think everyone except the judges were right. So
yeah, just
it's a strange one because I knew, weirdly, I always look at the results.
I know you do. You're strange.
Before I actually watch the fights, not on big fights, but on fight Most. Nights and stuff. Yeah, because I always feel like, is it worth my time to watch them back? Not I love watching fights, of course, but the fight nights usually aren't the most entertaining. So I always check the results just to see if they're worth doing.
Yeah.
And because I saw all the controversy around the fight, I tuned in and I can't see how Albazi won, in my opinion.
No.
Like, I know he had a bit more like control, obviously, like ground control, but I felt like Kai was very much, be able to get back to his feet and like turn it on him. And like, I think in the striking range, like Kai was way ahead. I can't really put my finger on it.
I suppose watching it, knowing the result, you watch a fight so differently. Watching a fight is a strange thing to do because you always have either a preference or like you just find yourself watching one more than the other. And to judge is so difficult. I mean, not when it's obvious, but it's a difficult thing to do because regardless of who you're watching, you always kind of, you find yourself watching one person more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
So to judge, ideally, you need to watch it twice, which obviously they can't sit there for another 15, 20 minutes or 25 minutes in that case and go, let me just review. But it's one of them. Even Dana came out at the press conference and he was like, yeah, it was close. Whereas normally you go, that was fucking horrible. And he's normally quite outspoken, especially with judges. And I know even Dan said that they need to be accountable. And I think it's something we've all been saying for such a long time because they kind of get in their car and drive off. And Kai, so he lost $100,000 plus his ranking. And he's a young guy coming off a title fight that essentially was still in the mix or has put himself back in the mix. Really, really justified his position. Like he's fighting a really tough opponent, but he put on a show, he justified his position. And yeah, he's still three. Because it's difficult when you go, oh, 3 versus 7, obviously 3 will win. The margin isn't that wide. It's very fucking close. And it only happens that he's a 3 because he got there a bit before, or he's had another fight before. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it's worlds apart and you've got Premier League playing against, I don't know, Belper Town. It's fucking, mm-hmm. it's a wafer thin point between each person. Mm-hmm. So for him to lose $100,000 and he's put 3 months in training, I'm not saying that he spent it before he's got it because obviously you wouldn't expect him to do that. But the impact that it's had on his life and even his drive and his feeling, because you imagine you've lost quite a spectacular loss when Moreno was a body shot.
Body kick,
it?
Yeah.
And obviously that's not seen as a weakness because it's debilitating. But at the same time, you weren't knocked out cold and you weren't submitted.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
a freak placement
you
of a
kick. You are conscious when you
yeah.
lose as well.
And it's a conscious thing that you've had something taken away from you. And mm-hmm. ultimately, he probably believed, or you'd like to think he believed, he's going to win this fight.
Mm. He was coming back in that third round, for sure. He was like pushing back again. Because Moreno, I think, you know, won the first two rounds, but he was kind of building confidence. And Moreno was already cut by that point
yes.
as well.
Yeah, and as we know, a cut, it can change a fight so mm-hmm. quickly. So he's essentially at the top of the tree and loses the way he lost, which is unfortunate, but he's built himself back up again. He's got back on the horse. He's coming out. Obviously, Izzy's then lost and regained his belt. Volk's in his cut. Everyone's there, like the whole momentum. And he did exactly what he was meant to do. And they were like, I was so shocked because I can't remember what I was doing. And my finger on the iPad slipped and it saw Albazi on the floor, like with his head down. So I was like, what the fuck's gone off? Like, I didn't know that he was celebrating.
Hmm.
So I kind of rewound. You know when you've got just a massive bar of play?
Yeah,
and you're trying to like skip.
Yeah.
And this is like half one in the morning. I've had a couple of beers Sunday and I'm like, trying not to ruin fights. And I saw him and I was like, what the fuck are they watching? Like, to me, it was so a million miles off. And it just echoes the whole, like, this has been going now for 30 years. We know this has been going for 30 years. There's enough retired MMA aficionados that should be involved in this.
But my only thing is, obviously, everyone's come out and says that the judges should be accountable, and of course, yeah, but I think people are saying that they should like be part of the press conference maybe and talk about
for real the fight. And the refs.
But I don't see how, like, what other sports do you see that happening?
Well,
like, you don't, like, you know, a Champions League final between Real Madrid and Liverpool, say, and it's the last minute of the game and the ref
makes a bad call,
penalty, and Liverpool lose based on that. Have you ever seen the referee having to be held accountable? Obviously, everyone's pissed off at the referee. And I know there's a lot more, like, there's people, more people involved in that decision now there is than there was, but like, why you never see referees?
But it doesn't affect other sports the way it affects this sport, which is mainly partly down to the UFC pay scale and yeah, down, to the, down to the way it works. But if you think about it, Real Madrid, Liverpool have a bad decision on Sunday. No one loses wages. No one loses fuck all.
True.
It's just a frustration and a disappointment and all the rest of it that goes with it. And obviously, with football, especially, it is a tribal sport. So if Liverpool have lost unfairly, then that will give the supporters more more things in common to group together to be like, no, well, we didn't lose. We didn't. And which is tribal. That's fine. But Kaikara France has trained for 3 months. He's then paid for people to come over. He's paid for everyone. He's paid for his training. He's had to back himself to get to this position where he's at. And essentially, he's done enough to justify his fight and his win. He showed up on weight, done everything right, not gassed, not looked bad. He's put everything in. And because some prick is not either paying attention, doesn't understand what he's watching, or for whatever reason, has gone... massively impacted his life, and he can't go out on Wednesday or the following Sunday and fight again. He's got to wait another 3 months.
I understand there's the aspect of judging as well. It's not like in football, it's like black and white. Was it that a decision or was it not?
It's not
judged. You know, you don't get to the end of a football match like, oh well, I think they play better, so they win. Exactly. I understand the difference in that sense, but I feel like but you said about the pay aspect, like, you know, if the fighters were getting paid more, then maybe it wouldn't have been of so much of a blow to the fighters. Yeah. And I understand that they've trained for so long, they've put a lot of time and money into that training as well. But I just don't see the benefit in singling out people. I know people got to be responsible for their mistakes, but I just don't see what... Yeah, being accountable, of course, but like, I don't see what the difference... Because even if they get the judges up on the press conference and they talk about the fight, why did you make those decisions? Like, why is he going to change his opinion?
Well, to me, it's about being accountable for your profession. Because if you are consistently shit and you're never told you're shit... you will carry on being shit and you'll probably get worse. Whereas, I mean, there's been enough referees in the past that Dana despises, that he kind of has made sure they don't ref anymore. And they haven't been accountable. They haven't been on camera. They haven't spoke about it, but they've been phased out because they can't really be trusted because they're not good at their job. So, if it means that you've got someone that's new into the game, right, and they let a sub go on too long or whatever it is, whatever decision they get wrong, if they have their meeting and it doesn't have to be that they're sat in a press conference and everyone's throwing shit at them. It's just saying to them, because he could have seen something differently. He could have gone, yeah, well, as much as you say he was dominating him this, look, he got up and he did this, and there could be a justification for it. But oftentimes when something is so clearly one way and someone's put I think it's this, there's got to be a justification behind it because they're not, it feels so far opposite to what everyone else is thinking. It's that, what the fuck were you watching? So it's not like it's an attack, but it's more understanding what they saw or how they've interpreted something. Mm-hmm. Because if they've then sat down and said, it's specifically because of this, and we go, we don't score it like that, dude. Like, not being taken down in a round, you've scored him, like, you've given him 10 because he wasn't taken down. But he wasn't even being attempted to be taken down. So why have you put, well, he wasn't taken down. You're like, I don't know where you've studied, but that's not part of the game. Mm. And unless he's educated or re-educated around the sport, he can't get better. So it's not a witch hunt, and it's not just to embarrass people. It's just for them to either... explain or justify, like with Herb, with Stop the Fight. If Herb was sat down and go to Jai Herb and you watch it back, you go, dude, what are you seeing? If you go, look, it was a split second. I don't know. It's something, any ref, any judge, like if they know they have to be sharp, they will make more of an effort to be sharp. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's not an easy job. 15 fights in a night, 12 fights in a night, whatever it is. It's a lot. It's a long night, but essentially that's your job.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? You can't get on a plane and know, well, I'm a pilot, I've got to fly to, I don't know, Zimbabwe. Oh, well, fuck it. It's like, you've got to be prepared for that. It's your job. You're accountable. So I think it's more just trying to understand, or even for Kai to go, why have you cheated me out of this?
Well, there's area of the sport. Like, I mean, like, we look at the sport and it's, what is it, 30 years old, essentially. Like, the evolution is, like, way off what, you know, the boxing, over 100 yeah. years old, football, over 100 years old. And they're still not at a point where they're still not evolving.
Yeah.
Like, and there needs to be, like, investment within judging. There needs to be investment within refereeing as well. And that will come eventually. But I think, yeah, it's something needs to change, obviously. But I don't really know what the solution could be at this point, no. unless they just, you know, besides making people accountable, like.
Well, it's more, at the minute, it's just yesterday's chip paper, because as much as it's like a big thing on the Sunday night, Monday morning, and now everyone's just ready for 289.
Mm.
So they're not necessarily, it's not like the judges sat there thinking, oh God, I'm going to get a right bollocking or anything. There's no worry. And it's the same like with the money. So yeah, it affected Kai massively because he's on 100 fight, 100 win. And that's UFC's pay structure. That's their issue. But deep down, the number means just as much to him. So it doesn't matter if you're on an 8-fight, 8-win or a 50-fight, 50-win, whatever it is. It's about fairness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you've been sparked out cold, and you know when people get up and they're like, oh, it was fine, you go, all right. We can kind of play that off to know that that's an impact of head trauma. That's one of those things that, look, we've got to play nice. We're not going to stand there and tell the guy he's a fucking idiot, he's been knocked out, but we're going to placate him and go, listen, no problem. Once you've watched it back, that's why they don't interview, or they try not to interview knocked out fighters anymore. Because
mm-hmm.
the time when, was it Overeem versus Stipe? And he was like, oh, Stipe definitely tapped. And Joe Rogan's like, no problem. Let's watch the video. And there's literally nothing. And you've got this guy who's concussed, confused in his own life and in his new world that he's now not going to be the champion, and be like, and it's just kind of rubbing the salt in. So, it's playing fair and playing nice with everyone. So it's not just about necessarily the money or the status. It's just more about, if someone's gone in and they are consistently terrible, what can we do to make sure that they are the best in their field?
Yeah.
Because, like, you've had refs in the past where they'll be coined as, like, the very best, but they still make mistakes. Mm-hmm. We all make mistakes. And I think sometimes it feels better when someone goes, look, I fucked up. Because it makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a big difference. And everyone's accountable. So, yeah, I felt for Kai. And, I mean, it just felt a little bit shitty.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, though, like, you know, not taking anything away from Amir Albazi, like, he certainly had a good fight as well. I don't think he, you know, he won, maybe not. It could have gone either way, like, really, I guess. Well, it couldn't, but... You know, it is a tough thing to take, especially like you said, if Kai, you know, you're at the top and then it's just a setback. But then you see it's like Amir now has got the opportunity to go on and potentially, you know.
And he's now on two losses.
Maybe one fight away from a title shot, or, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and it's a tough sport. It's a tough sport to have that against you.
There's an odd number of rounds for a reason.
Mm.
To try and avoid a draw. Or to avoid no decision. So that's simply why it's that way. So even if you break it down into the rounds, it was 3-2.
Mm.
And I think that's where people struggle, because regardless of your opinions or your affiliations or your knowledge or your experience, anything, that needs to be justified. So if everyone else has given Kai round two and he didn't, what have you seen different? Have we missed it, or have you interpreted something incorrectly?
Mm-hmm.
And all it is just a re-education, or just a continuous evolving of the sport to try and understand every aspect. Like, back in the day, people didn't understand knees. They didn't understand a takedown. They didn't understand a takedown defense. They didn't understand a reversal. Like, it was all new.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, the evolution's been massive to this point, but then it kind of gets stuck on really shitty points. but points that have a massive impact on the fight world and fighters especially. So
I think it's very like for the judges as well, and like very environmentally based. So, you know, when you've got a stadium full of people and everyone's watching it from like 50 feet back,
yeah,
and they see something that looks impacting, but it's not.
Yeah.
And the crowd goes wild. Surely that there's like some kind of subconscious element of like, oh, that was a good, you know what I mean? And like, you know, and maybe the judge's position where like they're behind a mesh wall and stuff like
maybe
that.
Maybe watch
like,
it on a TV. Maybe watch it on a screen.
And they do have screens out, I think.
Yeah, right? But if they were in a back room, like when we were in the media tent.
Yeah, and they're not influenced by any other outside source. They're in like a dark room, literally got screens in front of them, and they just focus on one or two screens.
Well, Faber quite famously had his hair cut off because he's always had long hair.
Mm.
And he had it completely cut off. Because even when it was plaited and braided, there was sometimes that he thought that he was getting penalized for shots that weren't effectively doing a lot, but it looked a lot more because sweat was coming off or his head was moving in a certain way.
And it's like certain styles, like, you know, like Robbie Lawler or like Mad Spinell, like they've got that kind of Philly shell style where they look like they're getting hit, but a lot of the shots are being slipped or blocked.
Yeah.
And but from someone who may not necessarily understand that style of fighting, it looks like they're losing.
Or if you're behind them, like Dan was when he fought Marcus Davis.
Because you get hit, if your hand's covering your head, but you get hit, your head's still going to go back, but you're not necessitating any impact.
But if you've got a whole fighter in front of you and you can only see that body reacting, you don't know if it's an impactful shot. So if it's a, like I said, Dan fought Marcus Davis, and I think it was classed as a knockdown, but it was a slip. But that's because it was something like that. And it was basically the judges could see Marcus's back and Dan was on the other side and essentially Dan was on the floor. So he got back up, but they saw that as a knockdown and that's why it was a split decision. But it wasn't a knockdown. And there's only a certain amount of time in between that you can watch a different angle or whatever. But even if you're judging and you've got, I don't know if it's two judges or like there's six judges, okay? And like there's two on one fighter, two on the other fighter. And do you know what I mean? So basically you're getting different angles, but you're just watching one fighter and scoring what they're doing. Not necessarily an argument for them winning, you're just scoring what they're doing. So at the end of it, you can go, well, he had five takedowns.
Yeah, that's not a bad shout to like have two people focused on one fight and two people focused on another and accumulate what they're doing in the fight. That's their focus. And then cross over those two results at the end would surely come with an outcome.
Well, that way then if you go, well, he's had seven takedowns in round one and your other guy had six, well, you won on the takedown side as a striking. And it's a bit more of a point system because at the minute, as much as it is a point system, it's kind of how it's interpreted as well. And obviously if me and you are sat doing one fighter, and I don't know if I'm pressing an imaginary button, but you know, like significant strikes.
Yeah.
That's really fucking difficult because you almost need to pause the fight every time a punch lands goes, did that hurt? And he's like, a fight will never admit it, but it's a significant strike is a difficult one.
But isn't it where, because obviously takedowns are scored higher than strikes, right? So
it depends where you are.
Right.
And it so now
if
you, depends.
If someone in a round has, someone's hit someone 30 times and say 20 of them are significant, yet the opposition gets two takedowns, then who's won that?
Fuck knows. And it's the amount of times now when you'll see someone get taken down.
There's control time, I guess, when you're on the ground and then how they respond to getting taken down and stuff like that.
And the control time has started to affect if it was a takedown or not. Because before you get someone down, that's a takedown. Mm-hmm. Whereas now they can bounce back up to their feet and they go, oh, and you'll hear DC ask all the time, was that a takedown? It wasn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And depending on which state they're in, is down to the like description, if you like, of what counts as a takedown. So it's very, very complicated.
Yeah, I think Hamzat versus the Leech? I think Dan was talking about it, where But I think it was scored. Obviously, you finished it in the first round pretty quick. But I think it would scored that Khamzat had like 3 or 4 takedowns in that first round. Yet, because he was chain wrestling,
he hadn't let go of him.
It was only 1 takedown.
Yeah.
Essentially, even though he grabbed him, turned him, and like I think his knee dropped to the ground, they must have counted that as a takedown, but then he got back up. But then it's like it was Khamzat just changing the angle each time, and then he finally got him down and held him down.
Yeah.
But yeah, where does that, like, what counts as the takedown in that whole, that's a whole sequence of wrestling. Surely if it's a sequence, it only has one end result.
Exactly.
He gets takedown or he doesn't get taken down.
But it's the same as the defense of the wrestling or defense of the takedown, because if someone can sit in, like, let's say Damian Myers, if you can sit with Damian Myers on your back for 4 minutes, that is an incredible feat.
Mm.
And it's very unheard of. So does Damien get the points for being able to secure the position but not the finish, or do you get the points for surviving? Does that make sense? Because back when it was more specialised players of their games, that was the thing that you were more like...
Yeah, it scored offensively rather than defensively a lot of the time.
Like the fact, if you can sit with Damien Myers on your back and you can avoid getting subbed for a whole round, that's fucking insane.
Mm.
That's not really heard of. But it's happened. And I suppose it's more the complete, like, what have you done? So even if you're being dominated, you've survived. But if you've managed to escape or get up or whatever, I think because there's not really a better system than their 10-point must scoring system that they're going to have to re-educate a whole army of fans on. Because it'd be insane now to try and change something. It would feel, I'm not saying that they can't, because obviously that's what we're saying, they need to. But it's more, I think sometimes the education of the people sat in the seat, pressing the button or marking the card. And when you've got people that have been through this sort of experience and they know enough, because like the majority of fighters I know, as in Jimmy or Dan or like Wayne or whoever it is, on local shows and small shows, they're normally the ref or the judge because they're the ones with the expertise. So it seems silly that we get to this kind of level and we go, all right, Cecil Peoples, what's your background? And he's like,
bank manager.
Fuck all. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, yeah, it's, even if they have trained in the past, it's such a different thing.
It's an interesting thing that I think the sport has to go through. This evolution, like, you know, imagine what MMA is going to be like in 30 years. Like, you know, I can't picture it. I imagine obviously it's the same as football, the essential like rule of the game, you know, is the same.
Yeah.
And the basic rules are the same, but like, you know, just the pace of the game, like, you know, the technology within like nutrition, you know, athletes, like they're much more athletic now than they used to be 30 years ago. And I think it's slowly becoming like that. And I just can't imagine what it would be like in the next 30 years. But I feel like every sport has to go through this, like,
maybe
teething period, every aspect of it, like the reffing, like just the people involved, like the athletes involved in the sport. Like Dan was talking about it, like just where we're going through this phase now where you're seeing a lot more like, the heavyweight division, a lot of the fighters being a lot more athletic and, you know, that's purely down just to like nutrition and like living the lifestyle of an athlete rather than a Derek Lewis kind of character.
But do you think it might be like a national thing in the future that there won't be a UFC or a Bellator or a PFL? It'll be like fighting's on and you've got all the fighters in different divisions. So like
Premier League.
Yeah.
It's French leagues, Italian leagues, stuff like that.
Exactly.
I could see it that way. I mean, I listened to Brendan Loughnane talking yesterday about the PFL belt and like, you know, in the next few years, I think that's going to be the most respected belt because of what you have to do to win it.
Yeah.
Like he was saying that in order to win the PFL belt or in order to become 2-time champion, he needs to win 8 consecutive fights.
That's insane.
And like, that's what you do in a league. That's what you do in a, you know, you're in a season and it's who is the best at the end of that season, which I think is the best format in sports, really, because it proves it, it filters out all the bad people and proves who's the best.
But you imagine that in like in anything you do, even if you were playing a silly parlor game like penny can, where you're trying to throw a 2p in a can, you've got to get eight in one after another. You can't miss one. It doesn't, like the intensity that that brings and the pressure that that brings is phenomenal. And to be able to achieve it, like you say, unfortunately, Dana's got a much bigger mouth. So while ever he's around, the UFC will always be the premier division just because of how it's being positioned, in my opinion, just because the media monster behind it and then what they can get in front of you is so current. And well, it's like throwaway media, isn't it? Like this week is all 289. So fucking next week won't be, but it'll be because it's got the intensity of the next fight night. Bam, bam, bam. And because they've now built that to the point where they are the most relevant because they've got the time and the resource. When you think about it, like Brendan's had to fight eight times to defend it. That's fucking...
Well, by the end of the season, it's become two season champ. Yeah.
That's crazy.
But the thing is, the UFC, it's relevant for today's media, really, because they put on fights that people want to see. It's very fast paced. It's like, you know, they do have that. You know, they have the UFC fight nights that are like, you know, the ranked fighters working their way up, and, you know, and then they'll get onto the pay-per-views once they're... But then there's people on the pay-per-views that are ranked lower, but because they've got a bit more of a popular like backing or whatever, you know, they're more likely to get on the pay-per-views. And it pays relevance to today's media and you know, who's got the most Instagram followers? Well, they're going to make more money, so we'll put them on the pay-per-view.
But they've kind of shifted with that, like they've had to adapt always. And I think that's where they've become more of an overwhelming machine of fighting because they've been doing it for such a long time. They've kind of managed to manifest whichever way they want to take it. Whereas now, because it's all about TikTok, Instagram followers, and like the Jake Paul thing, that sort of stuff that's becoming more relevant because the UFC thought they've got it nailed. This is how you do it. This is how you promote it and all the rest of it. And then you get someone like Jake Paul, who's got a billion followers on YouTube, and he can create such a storm because they are loyal followers that you go, hold on a fucking minute. There's money in that. Oh, okay. And that's where it's kind of, Dana wasn't expecting that. He's not ready for that because that's not what they were trying to direct the way that they've been building the business. Because it's like, it blows my mind a bit that, like, even Power Slap or Ultimate Fighter, I always watched Ultimate Fighter. Always really engaged in it, loved it.
Carry on.
You got something to say about it?
Well, I was just going to say we'll chat about the Ultimate Fighter.
Yes, we will. I'll do it right now. So, episode one, I didn't get a chance. Does it come out on a Tuesday?
It comes out on, the first one came out on a Sunday.
So, whenever it was, I missed it. But I knew that I was going to catch up with it.
Because
for me, I don't do anything I've mentioned a million times. I don't do anything on a Sunday until I watch the fights. I need to know what fights are. I need to know where rankings sit and all the rest of it. I just geek out over it. But that's my schedule. So then when I was working on some bits, I had the Ultimate Fighter on. But I'd seen the result on Instagram. And I'd seen the result 30,000 times. And I think to myself, this is a subscription service, either BT or Fight Pass, however you're consuming it. Why the fuck are you showing me the result? And I know, I'm not going to say what the result was because you might not have seen it, but it kind of fucks my head that, like, you've got this subscription package that you're ruining with promotion on social because I don't want to know who's fucking won. I don't want to even see a disappointed Mike Chandler or a disappointed Connor or an angry confrontation because of a result. I want to see that. I watched the whole thing knowing what the result was going to be. And I kind of find myself not engaging with it, which I don't want to be episode one thinking, I'm not really bothered about this, because I've never felt like that before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they give too much away.
They're showing you behind the curtain, man. Mm. This is how porn is like one of the most fucking valuable industries in the world, because someone wants to know what this person looks like without their clothes on. So you got to pay to see it. But if you can just find it,
yeah,
you're not going to pay. It's fucking bonkers. So like I say, power slap, I know is a dirty word, but the whole fight is on. Like you can literally watch a whole thing. By the time you've gone through your phone for 10 minutes, you go, all right, well, he didn't get up. He didn't get up. Yeah. He did. He didn't. Forrest is looking awkward. Well, that floor looks spongy. Wow. Okay. But it's all the result. It's not like they're selling you the hype. They're just going, this is what happened. And it seems, I'm obviously not a media mogul, but I don't know how the fuck they've made that decision that they're like, we just show the results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I get what you mean. But the first episode I liked. I think I said this last week when we were talking, well, a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about it, like the only real reason I'm watching this one is purely because of McGregor.
Yeah.
I think they did that thing as well, you know, you're saying about showing, it's like this season on Ultimate Fighter. Yeah. And then they show like all the highlights. I'm like, oh, well, fucking.
I don't want to see it. I don't want to do that.
I like the next week or something, like, oh, next week or whatever. But then they just show the highlights for the whole season. You know?
Yeah. I've watched Gold Rush. I watch Survivor. Any programs that I watch where they go previously or next week, I skip it. I don't watch trailers for films.
Have you watched because I haven't watched episode two yet.
I've not watched episode two yet. But then I was on Instagram and literally I had to flick past something because I saw a red pair of shorts and a blue pair of shorts. And it looked like a fight ending sequence that I was like, I'm kind of convinced I know what's happened. But I haven't seen the strike land and I don't. And look, we've seen Pat Barry and Czech Congo a million times of people that you think they're out and then they're not out. Mm-hmm. So it just, I don't want to be careful on Instagram during the week because I might see a result. Whereas like, this is why I've always been quite grateful that it's not as popular as say football, because I could be driving along and you hear football results. I'd be devastated if
but they don't show you one. This is the thing. They don't, like, maybe a few days later you can watch like YouTube highlights and stuff like that.
But when on a Sunday or a Saturday,
it's not pushed in your face. But I always, I don't think.
On the radio, they'll tell you about results. So the popular sports, F1, if there's been an F1 race, they'll announce it on the news of the hour. Mm. If there's a football match or a derby or whatever, they'll announce the score. I'm a weird person. I don't want to know any of that because I want to experience it as a brand new, fresh set of eyes. So regardless if it's Ultimate Fighter, whatever it is, I don't want someone to go, oh, it sinks at the end, because I want it to be a surprise. I want it to be the whole experience. So I know you can look at results and it doesn't really bother you because that's what you want to do. You want to know it before you watch it. Whereas I want to watch it completely impartial and just enjoy the whole thing.
I don't do that all the time. No. It's only the ones that are like less interested in.
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the time I do watch it, like the pay-per-views I watch live.
It just seems strange that like this whole thing to bring the Ultimate Fighter back and the whole story behind Conor, I know, is the driving force. But it's not even like Conor's got a fight booked at the end of it. Do you know what I mean?
Not yet, no.
He's fucking massive.
Yeah, yes.
Like, he's huge.
It's like the crimson chin as well.
Yeah.
The beard's gone. His head is massive. And yeah, he looks a bit, doesn't look like the same person, oddly enough.
No, and I think it must be strange for Chandler because obviously Conor's got his own brands. So he's got McGregor Fast. He's got, is it the Black Forge? He's got Proper 12. And the whole house is covered in it.
Mm-hmm.
They're wearing Black Forge tops. And like he's literally got an in. And I mean, there's been a lot of people back in the day and even now that have had brands that haven't essentially been featured on The Ultimate Fighter. Like they used to cover stuff up. So Matt Hughes was part of he was season two with Rich Franklin. And he had a brand, or he's part of a brand called One More Round. And it looked like a fighter sitting on a toilet doing this. One minute. And it was a similar time when Affliction was out and stuff.
Right.
And they didn't wear it. It wasn't there. And it's like you could go through a lot of them, like even when Connor fought before. But it seems that it is all catered to Connor.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, Connor's still got that, like everyone who fights him, it's an opportunity for them to earn a shitload of money, isn't it? Like he holds that above everyone else, even though he's not a champion, he's not even ranked, I don't think, at the minute. So it's like, but he still holds that star power where he can headline a pay-per-view and the people who fight him are going to make bank. That's why when Oliveira was champion, he wanted the McGregor fight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he just knows that after that fight,
I can retire.
He could probably retire and not really worry about
it. Well, Conor's got the top four pay-per-view records. He's got four of the top five.
Mm.
That's, I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's an achievement. When we're talking about fairness for fighters and all the rest of it, like we were earlier, it seems, well, I don't know. If I was Chandler, I'd just be looking at it like, because he's obviously wearing his, has he got, what's his, Hold On or Hold Fast? Oh, no, not Hold Fast, that's someone else. Hold On or some shit. I don't know. He's got his own brand, but it's not the same as the push that Conor seems to have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know, man. He just seems huge. Like, did you manage to watch the documentary yet?
Yeah, I've watched three episodes of it.
Yeah.
I've got the last one. I think at the end of the third one, he just lost to Poirier. So, sorry.
The first time.
Yeah. So, no, the first time we got knocked out in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
So, the last episode, I assume, is the second fight, well, the third fight, where he snaps his ankle.
Yeah.
But it's really good. I enjoy just how it's made as well. It's a good documentary.
Superb.
I don't know who made it. I don't know if it was Netflix or whatever, but it's just a cool documentary, and there's a lot of unseen footage within it that I don't think anyone's really ever seen before. And it's a good insight to his, you know, process coming back after the Khabib fight, and just how he got back into, you know, with the Cerrone and the pandemic and stuff, like, you know, how that affected him. Because I think after the Cerrone fight, his plan was to like kind of, and the momentum he had after that Cerrone fight, and he was probably in his prime at that point, really. Yeah. Like as a physical fight, like as a
being ready, physically, not mentally, over-preparing, like, not overtraining.
He'd already been champion, but you know, you could even say that came quite early on in his career. So when he came back and beat Cerrone, and then obviously the pandemic hit, he had this idea of having a year-long season, fighting three or four times in the year and essentially coming back and trying to get the belt back. Because I think there was talks of, because that fight against Cerrone, he came back as a welterweight, I think. And there was talks about like the welterweight title shot after that, after the Cerrone fight. But I think like the UFC basically just kind of shut him out a little bit after that.
Yeah.
And
but all we'll remember is him saying he's retiring, which kind of came out of the blue as a fan. And then when you watch this back, he was actually kind of shouting out for it.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting and kind of fascinating the way it's shot, because it gifts you behind the scenes. And there are times when you can think he's the best person in the world, and sometimes where you can think he's a bit of a prick.
Yeah.
But because it's endless access to the behind the scenes, it kind of justifies this insanity of his life, because he's being really nice to Poirier. Now he's being a prick to Poirier. But because you've been let in the back door, and you know that, well, he's not got the kids with him that time, and actually he's got to worry about the ankle before he's gone out there, like, you can overly justify every single element. So it kind of protects the UFC's investment, because anyone else on like a two-fight skid, especially to the same person, and... Well, even a two-fight skid, obviously, I know he had the Cowboy thing, but if you speak to Cowboy, he was kind of, he'd psyched himself out of that before he even started. So as impressive as it was, Cowboy's a notoriously slow starter, and he was star-studded by it being Connor, and Connor put fucking heat on him. So with all those facets, you've got like essentially a fighter that's got more pull than any other champion, really, because everyone is just living every part of his life. And if you're not living it behind the scenes at the time, you're getting it fed to you in whichever documentary, because this documentary covers the past couple of years, but then the previous one was like the rise.
Yeah.
So there's always that justification of this fucking insane environment that it doesn't really matter if you like him or hate him, you're going to tune in. And that is what adds to the pay-per-view figures, mm-hmm. because there can't be anyone really that's in the fight game that isn't interested to see what happens next. Because to see him go, come back with Cowboy, look kind of super slick and ready, to then struggle with his ankle, break his ankle, balloon up to an absolute fucking mahoosive guy. Then all these behind the scenes videos of him gambling and bare knuckle and all the rest of it, to then see which one are we going to get back. All I suppose Dana's ever trying to do is justify that next investment each time. And he knows all he's got to do is try and get him in the cage. And it's like ever decreasing circles, isn't it? It's like it will start to lose momentum and lose value if he doesn't get the belt or he doesn't get wins. And that's where on losing two to come back from the size he is and all the rest of it, like it's just fascinating. But it's car crash. You can't take your eyes off it because on one hand, he's the most wonderful, devoted father that wants to give his kids everything. And he just comes across as so invested in the kids that is really lovely. And then on the other side, he's just a fucking maniac.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's obviously that life is such a strange life to get used to and accustomed to. And then because everyone else has got opinions and all the rest of it about it, and they're constantly telling you, like, obviously, the True Geordie thing came out the other day, didn't it? Because he had a massive blowout of True Geordie.
But you know those voice notes that keep popping up that McGregor sends to people.
Yeah,
what are they from? Are they from him sending them to the people?
Yeah, or like a DM. So I don't know how they style it in the.
Yeah,
but it's just like it's an edited video of just basically this is a voice
note. So that's a voice note that he's sent to True Geordie.
Yeah.
And True Geordie's been like, oh, this is what McGregor's sending me.
Or he's just gifted me a million fucking likes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because essentially that's what it is.
It's so funny listening to him.
Yeah.
Like some of the insults that he throws out there. It's just like, mate.
Yeah. It is crackers. But then you've got to look at it, and True Geordie featured on his documentary throughout the whole thing, either doubting him or supporting him,
yeah,
like as like a talking head. So it's, I don't know if sometimes
people are just trying to cash in on him a little bit as well.
They kind of do, but it's one of them where sometimes you gotta look at who his loyalties and affiliations lie with, because he'll always go to Ariel's, and Ariel will be cautious in criticism of someone like Connor, because he's done it before where he's spoken about Nate or Nick or Rampage and then seen him at a press conference and they've called him out. They've gone, oi, motherfucker, what are you doing here? You said this. And he's like, oh, shit.
Mm.
And as a journalist, you kind of got to be kind of impartial, but also someone like Ariel's obviously followed the sport for a long time and enjoys it. He's not just doing it because that's what he did. So with someone like Connor, you'd like to think that he feels... It's the inner trust. It's the inner circle. It's the fucking meet the fuckers scenario, because obviously he's given True Geordie a platform. Not saying True Geordie hasn't got a platform. He clearly has got a platform and he's got a following. But when Connor has gone, I'll put you in the dock, because you had him, you had a few other people that kept popping up.
Mm.
And that is like, that's a bit of a bonus for those people. Because if you haven't seen True Geordie or you haven't seen the other people in it, then you might start listening to them or following them, because there was, I'm not going to say other people's names on there because they don't need the promotion. They've already got it on the documentary, but they're on there. So then if in the
Morning Combat were on there.
Yeah, Morning Combat are an all I want to mention.
Yeah.
Fuck everyone else. But it's, I'm joking, kind of. But if you've got... if he's done that and he's put it in, obviously he's not editing the fucking movie, but he's seen it all and he's okayed it all. Then when you turn around and you sort of, you've got an opinion that he doesn't quite like and he's had a few too many whiskeys, you're like, ah, oh, it's just all that car crash all over again. Mm. But that rant, or this current rant, will be in the next documentary. And it'll be either the best thing he did because he told him to go fuck himself and actually he's come out and he's won, or he'll spin it And it'll be the best thing he did because he actually listened to that rant back and he was like, do you know what? I've got to reflect and look into myself. And actually, it's the best advice I gave myself and now I want a different way. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's ever shifting. So it's a different, it is a unique beast of the game.
Yeah, I feel like everything he does, despite how crazy or obscene it is, there is a sense of strategy behind it in a way. You know, just the way he interacts with media, the way he interacts with, yeah, like personalities and stuff like that. There seems to be, he's opening doors that could either, he could go through and benefit from, or they're just going to shut behind him, but at least he opened the door to see what's on the other side.
For real. Thing.
And yeah, I don't think, I think he does stuff now, maybe not so much. I think he's at the point now where he probably doesn't have to do that as much, but I certainly think when he, you know, when he was on the rise and just everything he did at that point, like he did it for a reason.
It just became second nature.
Yeah.
And I think he's running out of fingers to put in pies at the minute. And that's where it's interesting because we've seen everything else that's been built around him. And it's just interesting to see what's going to happen with what we actually know him for. And that's having a proper fight, especially with his leg being fixed. Because...
But people always, like, we talk about him so much on this podcast as well. Like,
this is
people
it.
People always talk about
it. And I think that's the fascinating, that's what I was trying to explain. That's the fascinating thing, that it kind of doesn't matter if you love him or hate him.
Mm.
You're always going to tune in. And the most interesting thing is because he's on two losses and he's coming, like, when he was on the rise and he was doing nothing but winning and calling the wins and calling the wins, obviously had the wobble with Nate, but then got it back. When he went to... Mayweather, one of my mates said to me, oh, what are you going to do if he loses? I was like, I don't mean fuck all. And went, what do you mean? How can it not mean fuck all? He's going to fight Mayweather. I was like, exactly. It's like you having a free kick competition against Beckham.
Yeah.
There's a chance you could win, but it's fucking
very slim.
Very slim,
yeah.
Because you're not a footballer.
Mm.
But, like, you're really good at ice hockey. So fucking what? It's one of them. So when he obviously did that, and like, I thought, well, if he loses that and then keeps losing, how long is that top pay-per-view slot going to keep replenishing? Because when you look at other fighters we've had in the past that have been long-term champions, like Faber and like Miguel Torres and so many different fucking people, like eventually you'll see them on the undercard. Like Orlovsky was on the pre-fight prelims, not even on the normal prelims. And I know he's been around since, is it 99? And he's held the belt and he's been a fucking monster. He was so low on the card that he wasn't even on the broadcast, including the prelims. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
like
yeah.
His pull is running lower.
I think like someone like McGregor would be long gone before he's on the, like low down on the prelims.
I don't think he'd do it.
Yeah,
I don't think he'd do it.
Yeah,
I don't think he would.
There's an element of status that someone like that just—they're not. Well, they're way bigger than the UFC even.
Yeah,
and it's just like they're nah. But yeah, it's interesting. I enjoyed the first episode of The Ultimate Fighter. Anyway, I'm gonna watch the next one later, I think. But yeah, it's fun. A lot of the guys, obviously, they've done veterans versus. Well, young blood, I guess.
What do you think to the strategy that they played out in episode one, where Chandler got all of the returning fighters and Connor's got all of the new prospects?
What do you mean? What do I think of...
Would you? Obviously, it was a schoolyard pick.
Right.
So it wasn't that Chandler sat down and said, I'm going to have all of the veterans from the UFC that have fought in the UFC and you can have all the newcomers. I think it was interesting the way that it split completely that way.
Yeah. I think it's interesting in terms of like, cause it doesn't really offer the element of like, you know, if you've got veterans within your team and you're a younger fighter, you've got despite the advice from the coach,
knowledge.
You've got the experience from your teammates as well, which can often help you. But I do find it interesting that it is veterans versus, because it kind of determines.
It's cool.
I think it's a good determination of like if the veteran's done or like if, you know, or how good the young guy is.
Yeah.
Like who was it the first fight? What's his name? Because
Roosevelt Roberts.
Roosevelt Roberts. Yeah. He obviously got, he had some bad results.
His last two, quick
Bahamundes spinning kick
knockout,
yeah.
Dude.
That was insane. And I kind of forgot that that was him who received it. Yeah. So it was nice to see him come back and get a win as well. I felt bad for the dude who lost, but yeah, I think it's a more, like, having veterans against the youngs, it's a much more of a harder test, I think, for the young guys.
Yeah.
But it's equally a hard test for the veterans because they're fighting younger, fresher people.
They've already been there.
So I don't mind that. I think, I don't know if it was like purposely, yeah.
Do you not think it was strategic on Connor's part, because essentially it negates his responsibility a little bit? Because if he wins the overall thing, then he's taken this person that's never experienced the UFC and he's managed to form them, and he's basically gone, look what I did. I took the people that had never even made it and I got them to the point.
Yeah.
But then if they don't, he can go, yeah, well, these guys have fought in the UFC before. Mm. Imagine how hard that is.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
That makes sense. So yeah. Like, he's made Chandler feel like he's given him the best pick, but actually he's given himself an exit strategy of the perfect scenario, because if one of his guys does well or wins, then he's managed to make a star or bring someone to the show. Whereas if he doesn't, then you can say, well, the UFC is the best game in the world, and it's the hardest road to travel, and these guys have already been there. You imagine trying to get past that. So yeah, fair play to do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. I don't know if it was purposely like that, but now you say it, it's probably...
Well, like you said before, everything he does, he seems to have a fucking strategy. Yeah.
No, it makes sense.
But yeah, I'm keen to see how it plays out. And like I say, I've just got to try and stay off Instagram a bit, because I'm kind of... I don't want to know the Fox one, because the whole thing is an hour long and say 7 minutes of it is fighting.
Yeah.
And that's taken away from me, because I've sat through the whole fucking thing and then I've got, I don't know, someone on Instagram going, oh my God. You see that?
Yeah, it's just the drama, isn't it? It's always entertaining.
Yeah, fucking assholes. But yeah, it's good. It is good.
But obviously, this weekend is UFC 289 as well.
It is.
Not the best pay-per-view, I must admit. There's it's annoying. I was saying this to Dan and Veronica the other day. They should spread out the good fights more. Like, you know... Instead of packing one pay-per-view like full of like title shots and superstars, like spread it out a bit, you know.
Yeah.
I just think like they seem to just like build up big cards, and then the next pay-per-view isn't as good, and then the UFC fight nights aren't as good. You know, some of those co-mains could be on the UFC fight nights. I just think have a little bit more consistency in terms of what happens throughout the year, and there's not like a dip.
Yeah. I think for me, because I've watched it for such a long time, I'm kind of just grateful that I've got fights that weekend.
Yeah.
Which is difficult, because obviously back in the day we'd wait months between events, and so there was a lot more time to build narratives and cards and all the rest of it. But they were it was always similar fighters. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, I'm finding that I'm learning a lot more about different people that aren't necessarily on my radar. So, like, as much as, I mean, there's certain fighters that I literally can't wait to see fight. But at the same time, if I know that I've not got a certain fighter on the card that night or a certain recognised name, then I'm completely invested in whoever it is. So, like, on this card this weekend, there's Nate Landwehr. And he's been so good.
Mm-hmm.
But the first couple of fights he had...
Is he fighting Dan Ige?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't even know his name the first couple of fights, because I was just like, there's that crazy blonde dude. Motherfucker, I like him. But because he was kind of washed into the fight nights and he was kind of around the edge, when he does crop up, I'm like, fuck, here he is again, man. I really like this guy. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people like that, because it's so common, so regularly on, that... I know exactly what you're saying, but it doesn't bother me as long as I know I've got fights to watch.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't mind the consistency. So there's like some really, like they used to do it at Christmas. So it's like really high profile, like there was a massive card, so it'd be like Chuck against Vandalay or something, that's been brewing for fucking years, Pride, UFC, all the rest of it. And then, I mean, the problem is, we've seen it happen where they've set up a massive card and it's kind of been a bit shit. And then they've done it where it's been a fight night and every fight's a finish. And like, it kind of doesn't matter what the person's name is when you see someone getting sparked in, I don't know, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, because it's so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Because the energy of the card, it's just finish after finish after finish. And you're like, holy shit, we're rattling through these. So I know what you mean. And I think it's different. When you've got Amanda Nunes normally against someone that is so prevalent within the division that you're like, this is going to be a fucking test. And because it doesn't feel necessary, I'm not saying that it's completely one-sided, but it doesn't feel like it's the threat of what we've had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And she's managed to weather that threat in the past. If she's taken that on and obviously overlooked her or something, or for whatever reason, then yeah, it could be a really interesting fight, but I can't see her losing.
No, but you know, I thought that about the Juliana Pena fight the first time around as well.
Exactly.
So. And obviously Amanda Nunes is getting further into her career now where, you know, these younger fighters are coming up and testing her. Like I didn't think the same about Alexa Grasso, Valentina.
It's not just, at all, yeah.
It's automatically assumed when someone's that dominant for so long that they're just going to do the same thing again. I think it's an interesting fight because I think Aldana, especially like in the striking range, I think is a lot more dangerous than most people in that division. And that's where
Pena clipped her, right?
Yeah.
So, and this is why, I'll never forget, I spoke to a guy when I worked at Egg. He was a bit of a sausage. I mean, he was a massive dick. But
I worked at Egg and he was a sausage.
Yeah. Well, mate, I did work with a guy called Mr. Bacon. His email was bacon@egg.com. Honestly, I trained with him. He wouldn't mind me telling you either. But this guy, because MMA, I mean, I used to wear my tap out shirts and it was kind of a massive beacon because no one else had them. But if someone else saw it, they knew exactly what. Mm. So like you'd find this real little core niche quite quickly.
Yeah, I had that quite recently, actually. I was wearing my Bellator hoodie.
Okay.
And there was a dude I was walking not too far from here who's just like, oh, Bellator, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. It's like the first time anyone ever pointed it out, yeah.
But back in the day, I mean, I'm talking like 2002, three, early, I was having Affliction and tap out stuff imported just because you couldn't get it here. And so you'd quite quickly find your crew. And there was one guy, and he was into the UFC. And I come out for a fight night. I went over to talk to him. And he's like, I don't really watch undercards. I'm more of an MMA connoisseur nowadays. And I was like, the fuck are you on about, man? Absolute length. Like, who the fuck says that? What? You didn't watch the WEC because they were light of weight, or you didn't watch it. I was like, oh man, you just show me how much of a prick you are. Amazing. I never have to invest time in you ever again, you fucking bellend. And that was it. I kind of didn't need to talk to him. So ever since he showed me that his evolution through the sport was he got to the point where he thought that he was bigger and he wasn't interested unless it was a name against a name, King Kong against fucking Godzilla or whatever the fuck it is. I was like, no, man, anyone. I just want to watch two people fucking fight. Mm-hmm. And because fights were so rare before, if you didn't have a UFC, you might get a WEC or you might get a Bellator or a Bodog or a Strikeforce or a Pride and they were all downloaded.
Mm-hmm.
No one's showing them. You just have to try and find blindly an event that you haven't seen a result to be able to watch Strikeforce or fucking Pride or whatever it is. And so now that there's always fights being piped to me, I'm like, yeah, fucking whatever it is. And I just sit there like a bit of a robot just watching anything. So I do like the big high profile stuff. And I do like hype. I like just feeling like I'm on the journey with them. So the Connor and the Aldo thing was massive. Chuck versus Randy back in the day was huge. The fact that Randy beat him was fucking unheard of.
Mm.
So all I was doing was trying to just consume all of that information, mm-hmm. the acquisition of pride. There was like memes of these fucking Yakuza shooting Dana and stuff. It was fucking insane. But it was so interesting because it was like, it seemed like it was a struggle all the time because it was all infighting. Whereas now, someone's kind of just tidied the mess up and gone, Owen wants a fight every weekend. We're going to give him some fights every weekend. And it's delivered on this really nice, shiny little platter. Mm. And I'm like, that'll do.
I mean, I'm nothing against this pay-per-view. I think it's great. Like, you could easily hold a card around Amanda Nunes as well. She's like the greatest ever, really. Especially in women's MMA. So, you know, but it was just the main card. You just expect.
It just feels weak.
And especially when they put some of the prelim cards they probably could have put on the main card just to kind of boost it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, nothing against the especially the two top fights this week, like Charles Oliveira versus Benil as well. Like, that's going to be a really, really interesting one.
I think it depends on your preference sometimes. Like, when Damian Maia used to headline or someone like that, it was difficult because he was predominantly a jiu-jitsu guy.
Mm.
And so if your preference was striking or spectacular knockouts, you may class the card as slightly weaker. And I don't think you have to apologize for that. It's more a case it's difficult because it's what you want in the event.
Yeah.
And the implications, like this weekend, it's probably more important to see what's going to come out of Oliveira.
Yeah.
And Dariush, because obviously the UFC have kind of kept Dariush really pushed down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting harder and harder to deny him. He's an older dude.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, well, he's only a year older than, despite his grey speckled hair, like he's only a year older than Charles Oliveira. And yeah. I think that actually saying that, I don't think he's even a year older. I think he's like 2 or 3 months older.
He looks like his dad.
They're both in a similar spot in their career, yet Oliveira's already been champion.
Yes.
He's already defended it, and now he's on another run to get it back.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's an interesting one because I'm a massive fan of Oliveira. He's probably like one of my favourite fighters around, just purely just because of his style, and I like the way he approaches fights.
But he had to wait such a long time himself to get a shot.
Yeah.
He's only remembered a bit more because he's had that title mm-hmm. win and he defended,
mm-hmm.
which, like, before that, he wasn't seen as the danger that he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's always been. But, like, I can remember watching him, lose to Miller
mm-hmm.
by fucking knee bar or something. He got subbed by Jim Miller.
What's his record, like 33-9, I think, or something like that? It's insane.
But all those losses were quite a while ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, I think sometimes it takes the UFC to get a champion to realise that, oh, fuck, people like this guy. Like, they may sit and choose, go, I think him or her or whatever. But then actually when the fighter gets crowned, they're like, oh, my God, this has had a bigger pop than we mm-hmm. expected.
Yeah.
And with someone like Oliveira, mate, that went around the fucking world because he was doing a lot of charity work and he used his social media for so much good. And he was doing so much like behind the scenes and the pandemic and all that other stuff that you just saw this guy as like a proper solid dude.
Yeah. And I think the way he was finishing fights as well, just like submitting everyone, but brutally choking them out and stuff. And I think that's very highly valued, you know, within the sport. Like, you know, it's the way you win fights. You know, you could win a bunch of decisions and
creating a highlight reel.
Yeah.
And that's essentially, that's all they want at the minute. Mm-hmm. They want some gold highlight elements because then that fills their Instagram pot of, we'll keep them, like, because the hype from that is the best.
Because mm-hmm.
when you see, like, Oliveira submitting Gaethje and fucking, beat Poirier the same way, right?
Mm-hmm.
All these these people that you're expecting, they're on the top of the tree. They're the ones that should be winning. That, like, holy shit, you stop and take notice because we all, the whole movement, I mean, of life is just, it's so fast at the minute. Everything's like, before you know it, it's Christmas, you're like, holy shit. So when you watch a fight, you think the amount of times you watch the highlight reel, it used to be that you'd have half a dozen fights in their pre-box shorts So before Reebok.
Yeah.
And then now you get half a dozen fights wearing their Reebok shorts, depending on how much they've won and if they've been in the UFC or they've come back and gone. Like Orlovsky, the amount of fucking like highlights are the real brutal ones are like old school.
Mm.
Whereas when you've got Oliveira in his Reebok gear, just literally, and you forget, you're, oh, fuck, I forgot he fought him and you're like, shit, this is,
yeah,
like, because it's always, it's so fast moving. So I think I kind of don't know what's going to happen because obviously he's coming off a loss. Dariush.
He's coming off an injury as well.
Is he?
Because this fight was meant to be on.
Of course it was, because I did the graphics. Couple of 287, 288.
I think so. A couple of pay per views back, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, this fight's been pushed back. So he is coming off a shoulder injury, and he's coming off a loss, obviously, to Makhachev. He missed weight, didn't he, as well? So
yeah,
he was vacated.
Yes, and that was the one before.
No, because he fought in yellow shorts, and usually they fight in gold. Black.
So if he'd have lost, he wouldn't have retained his title.
Yes. Wait.
Wasn't it the one before that?
No. I'm pretty sure because he fought Poirier. Sorry, he fought Gaethje, defended it. Fought Poirier, defended it.
So
and then weighed in. Weighed in Makhachev.
And I think it was the Poirier when he won, he didn't have the belt. So he didn't weigh in for Poirier, not Makhachev. He didn't weigh in for Poirier, still won, but the belt was still up for grabs for him and Makhachev. That's why he didn't fight in black shorts.
I see. Yeah.
So Poirier missed weight.
Yeah, no. Oliveira missed weight against Poirier.
Yeah, for Poirier.
Yeah.
He missed weight. So even when he won, he didn't get his moment of like, and still.
Oh, okay, yeah. I remember
it
now.
It was then vacated.
Yeah.
So then when he fought Makhachev, there was a lot of thing about, is he going to make weight? And he did make weight, so he was on track for getting his belt back.
Yes.
But then Makhachev came out and was like, let's smash you.
yeah.
And so he did.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, so.
I think if we're wrong,
so he's
tell
coming
us in a nice way.
He's coming off being, his belt stripped off him. And then he lost the opportunity
all
to get
the fuckery.
Back, got injured and pushed back, and now he's fighting again. So he's coming off a lot of adversity, I think.
Yeah, whereas someone like Dariush, I don't think that shit
he's
affects him.
He's got a point to prove.
Yeah, and that shit doesn't affect him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't come off that and be like, oh, he just seems to come in and go, here we go again. And he's just a solid, tough dude.
Mm.
The main thing that concerns me is he can be clipped. And Oliveira, we saw against Chandler, he got mauled and dropped and clipped by him and Gaethje.
Yeah.
And he sort of went back to his corner and was like, oh, 1 minute. Because I don't think that Dariush is a Makhachev danger, but he is a fucking danger. He's not a mauling, drowning, like Dagestani wrestler. He's still a danger, but...
But even Makhachev knocked Oliveira down.
Yeah.
You know, before he subbed him.
Yeah. And Dariush has got hands. I can't really guess, because if it was a year ago and Oliveira's, like, if this was a title fight, I'd comfortably think, yeah, Oliveira's going to do it. But with all the shit that's been in between, and with Dariush needing to prove a point or just endlessly proving points, if I had to put money on it, my head is probably saying Dariush. My heart is saying Oliveira because I really like his fighting style and his story, and I've followed him forever. But I wouldn't be surprised if Dariush clips him and we see Oliveira move weight class. He just seems to, like, if he gets clipped and subbed,
what goes up to welterweight?
Yeah, and it, like, because it might be, it happens, doesn't it, quite often, and especially when he knows not only has he got to get a fight back to try and beat the guy that beat him, he's now got to beat someone, a Dariush again, or an equivalent, Whereas you might go up the weight class and be like, do you know what? I've got a stronger chance here. I could put a bit of muscle on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the thing, isn't it? He's always, even at lightweight, I can't imagine how... Well, I think he's obviously grown into the weight class. And when he first came into the UFC, he was very young. So he was a featherweight and he had the frame of a featherweight. Probably didn't have as much muscle mass, but, you know, he'd grown into lightweight. But now he's even struggling to make weight at lightweight. I think it makes sense for him to go up to welterweight. And I think there's still, I think he can be really quite competitive at welterweight just with his style. Because there's no one really, I mean, obviously Usman and like Colby, like they're wrestling heavy kind of contenders. But there's no one really in the welterweight that has the same threat as what Oliveira has.
Because he's a bit like a whippet.
Yeah.
So he's like very, very, very strong, but not in a Usman kind of stacked out way. I mean, he's still shredded, don't get me wrong, but he's a bit more built for speed and a bit of trickiness.
I'm pretty sure Gaethje came out and said that Oliveira's the hardest puncher he's ever.
Which is insane. Or was that Poirier? Right? It was one of them.
Yeah.
And was it Gaethje that said his squeeze?
Yeah.
Because obviously he subbed it. But I mean, Gaethje dropped him.
Mm.
And he dropped Gaethje. Like that's...
Yeah, yeah.
What? I mean, we've seen more people clubbing him and he's just seemed to take it.
Mm.
But yeah, he is a bit of an unknown entity because... The thing is, whenever it's on the ground, you're in serious trouble. And I suppose Dariush has got a strong wrestling game, but Oliveira's subs are just, they are fast and kind of terrifying. So I don't know, are you just seeing that you want Oliveira, so it's head and heart, is all in?
Yeah,
all in.
I'm just a massive fan of his. Like I understand that, you know, Dariush is, like I said, he's got a point to prove and he's coming off a lot of like, bad decisions against him just within the UFC, like being put up as backup for the title shot and then being pushed back and stuff like that. So I understand Darius has got a lot to prove, but yeah, I'm just a massive fan of Oliveira and I hope he kind of gets back to that title challenging position.
So how does he do it? How does he do it on Saturday?
I think, well, Veronica's already put a prediction out on this.
I've not seen it. So you can either steal hers or you can let me know what your thoughts are.
I'm not going to steal hers. I think, oh man, I think it's going to be a really fast start from Oliveira, which it always is. And I think he's going to get knocked down a couple of times before they eventually get back to their feet. I don't know exactly how this is going to happen, but I think there's going to be an exchange before, you know, I think Oliveira is going to get knocked down, get back up. But I think the persistence of Oliveira, I think he's going to clip Dariush, knock him down, climb on his back and choke him out.
Okay.
I think essentially what he did to Poirier and Gaethje.
Yeah. I don't know if Dariush is just that tough grit. I don't know why. In my mind's eye, I just see that Dariush wins. And I don't know if it's like some spectacular, Oliveira has been so like persistent that he's either rushed in and catches a knee on the chin or something where essentially Darius is kind of walking away and Oliveira's just splayed out and he's like.
And Veronica what did said I tell you? She could see him winning by flying knee as well.
Who, Darius?
No, Oliveira.
Oliveira, okay.
Like just running in and like clipping. Yeah. I think once he's already hurt or something like that. I can just see that playing out. I don't know. There's just an element of like, it's hard to bet against Oliveira.
Oh, mate, I'm with you, and that's why I say in my heart, I think Oliveira. I'd like to see him win, but I don't know what it is. But it's because it's such a difficult thing, and like you say, the weight's always been an issue. He's had an injury. He's had the fucking controversy and all the other shit from missing weight. He's lost his belt. There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I think from what he's coming off and to win this and then get back into, I think he would have had to kind of develop his game a little bit, just in terms of not be so reckless.
Yeah,
because I think that's got a short lifespan,
especially a team like Makhachev's.
Yeah.
Because they are above and beyond committed and devoted to this count as that. This is, then it's, everything is regimented to the point. It's not like they go, should we go go-karting Wednesday? They are, they're fucking fighting. And that's it. Where Oliveira's been there, but there's always distractions with being a champion. Even if it means you're on, I'm not going to say this morning with Phillip Schofield, but you know what I mean? if you're on daytime chat shows like that and just, you've got commitments, it kind of like blurs everything else because now you are the one in demand. And unfortunately that takes up time that, well, you should be training, but you don't want to be the person that's not committing and not promoting themselves and building their brand, because then you're missing out on an opportunity if you lose it next. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's fickle, man. It's very fickle. But I can see Oliveira winning, and I can see Dariush winning, and I think Amanda probably retains her title.
Yeah, I think so. I think Aldana's got a good chance if she keeps it in the range where she's comfortable and good. But I think if Nunes takes it, like her last performance against Julia, because I think her last when she lost the belt initially to Juliana Pena, I feel like she kind of overlooked her a little bit
completely.
And when she came back, she refocused. You know,
well, she'd wronged all the rights.
Yeah.
So where Juliana was having like success before,
yeah.
Like, Amanda was like, hold on, no. Mm. And haven't they've had a baby recently? Or they had a baby?
They had a baby just before when she lost the belt.
Mate, and I can see why that would have been a distraction.
I think at that point, she just opened her own gym and stuff like that. There was a lot of distractions within her life, I think. Not distractions, but, you know,
commitments.
Commitments, yeah.
Yeah.
So I can understand why she lost the belt and why she overlooked her and why she probably wasn't prepared enough for that fight, because Juliana Pena came in there solely with the purpose to take the belt off Amanda Nunes, and that resentment and built up over a lot of time. So
it worked.
When she came back and she won it, you know, she clearly refocused. She'd clearly, you know, got back to that championship mentality. And I don't think she's going to overlook Aldana like she did.
No, she's added the levels to her game as well already. And so, yeah, I think the striking is a concern, but I've never really seen Amanda rest on anything.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen her sort of sit back and go, oh, I'm getting clipped, there's nothing I can do. She just, it's always evolving. I think the difference, Juliana caught her quickly.
Mm-hmm. And she drew her into a scrap. Drew her into a brawl.
Yeah, and then kind of, that was her game plan. So she was following something she was ready for, whereas Amanda had already been rattled a bit. And like, you can't always think on the fly that quick when you're in the deep water.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm still undecided on the co-main, but I think Amanda wins it.
Yeah, same. I'm going to go Amanda Oliveira.
Yeah.
Two Brazilian wins.
Yeah, I think
in Canada.
Dariush has just got a... He's got a fucking... There's something in there, man. There's something in there. But no, I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, the only other thing I was going to mention, did you see the Jake Paul Masvidal?
Oh, I saw it this morning. I didn't even know if there was any beef between them two. I know, obviously, Jake's fighting Nate in August, and... Yeah, I didn't know there was any like ongoing beef between them. But yeah, I saw the video where Masvidal apparently pulled up to like Jake's warehouse.
Do you think it felt real? Or do you think it felt a bit pretend?
I don't know with Masvidal, to be fair, because it's like, I can see Masvidal doing something like that. So it's not like, but also I understand that he's maybe lining himself up for the fight after Nate or whatever. And
well, Jake Paul is a promoter above anything else, right? He knows how to create a story or to build a narrative.
Make money.
Because when, was it Mayweather that pulled up on him?
They were both at a basketball game and Jake was weirdly on his own.
Yeah.
And Mayweather was with about 40 guys or something.
That kind of felt a bit more real because then Jake was actually making a move to try and get away. Mm-hmm. And it felt, whereas this one, like, you know when Masvidal had an issue with Leon Edwards, mm-hmm. not the ref, Leon Edwards.
Yeah.
He went and smacked him in the mouth. That's what Masvidal does. And that was in a UFC event with cameras everywhere, security everywhere. And he went up to him and he fucking smashed.
That was before he was like a superstar though. I mean, Masvidal was obviously well known at that point and he was a big fighter, a big personality within the UFC, but he wasn't, yeah, but he wasn't the
person. He went into a bar and smashed Colby in the face because he saw Colby.
Yeah.
He's a superstar at that point.
Yeah. I get you. I understand what you mean. And it's weird how like Jake already knew that Masvidal was kind of like, it's just, I can imagine being in that sort of environment and it's like, there's people, you know, there's crossover information all the time. And then, you know, Jake Paul's always got a camera guy around him. So he's just like, oh, you know, grab the camera, Masvidal's on his way. And then they create a narrative out
this
of that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to go down that route. I don't want to feel like they try to need to sell us bullshit. Just like when I watched Rocky being interviewed and then there's a bit of a commotion and then next minute comes over with his hands behind his back and goes bing, bing, bing. I'm like, oh, this is a thing. What? That's fucking gold.
Mm.
Whereas it feels like, you know, when they're trying to be clever and they're like, oh, what are you doing here? It's like, well, this is my turf. He's like, fuck off, man. Either smack him in the mouth or don't smack him in the mouth.
Yeah.
You got 15 fucking bodybuilding bodyguards around you. What is happening? So I don't know, man. It's, I've always respected and enjoyed the realness of Masvidal. Just that he doesn't take any shit. And I think Jake Paul, it will always be a narrative because he kind of doesn't get out of bed for anything else. Because he wants, it's essentially attention, isn't it? He doesn't need the money. He likes the attention. He likes the draw. So I don't know. It just felt a little bit, bit shit.
I'm sure we'll hear about it for the next like week or whatever. And I'm sure there'll probably be, you know, after the Nate fight, I can see that happening as well, like the Masvidal thing. Because the thing is, like, now Jake Paul's lost to an actual boxer. He's got to keep finding these fights with people who are either, like, retired MMA fighters or, you know, just big personalities within combat sports.
Well, I don't think the loss to Tommy did him any damage because it was so close.
I
think that he would have been better off going down the route of, let's go again, Tommy, or find another boxer.
Yeah, I don't think it just certainly didn't damage him in terms of, you know, he still has the ability and the personality to make money in that sense. But I just feel like he's probably steered away, you know, he was talking about fighting Canelo and shit. It's like,
what are you doing?
Yeah, like, you know, he's probably steered away from that route of, you know, if he'd have beat an actual boxer, he probably might have started calling out other boxers. But, you know, I think he's still got so much opportunity within that world that he's just kind of creating those opportunities with people like Masvidal, who are never going to back down from a fight.
No, but that's why I suppose we're in the fight with Nate, isn't it?
Mm.
Which that also feels weird. Obviously, the way that he left the UFC, was like, I'm retiring, I'm done, I'm all finished. And then
I feel like Nate's just like even at the press conference that they did. He didn't really give a fuck. Like, he was just there because he'd been, you know.
Yeah, but then, it was like when then you had, was it Jake Paul's media guy going, oh, I'll fight your brother or some
That's
shit.
That's just like poking a bear. Like,
yeah, but it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
But it's like we're trying to bring the Disney Channel into a fight sport and you're like, why?
Yeah,
like there can be enough aggro that you don't need to pretend and make shit up.
Yeah, it was unnecessary. Like, I don't.
Well, it just felt
like that.
It just felt kind of cheap and fake.
Yeah.
Whereas,
because like, dude, they were like people like Nate and Masvidal
fucking smack you in the mouth,
fuck you up.
Yeah, and you'd have it coming, and it would be justified.
And the cameras don't even need to be rolling.
Oh no, not at all, not at all. And so that, yeah, it was. I don't know, like I admire Jake Paul for what he's achieved and what he's doing, but there's a way in which he can do it. And I think sometimes it just feels a bit shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, I'm interested, man. I'll still watch the fight, and whatever antics he gets up to, I'll normally consume it, but I just don't want to feel like I'm being sold to, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like I say, when it was Rocky and he just went over and he was like, all right, bing, bing, bing. Same as when he thought, he had a word with Colby, like, fucking hell, Masvidal.
The one thing I would say is that because when, from the video I saw anyway, Masvidal turned up, I think he was like on his own or with like one of the dudes. Didn't have a camera guy with him. No. Was facing away from the camera that Jake Paul had over his shoulder. He was like kind of like looking away from it, sort of shielding. This is just my perspective of what.
I'm just trying to remember.
Yeah. So I don't. There's elements within that didn't seem like it was made up or pre-planned,
staged.
But you know, you never know.
Let us know what you think. Let us know what. Like, am I talking shit? Not about everything. Normally, there's some elements in there. But what do you think? Do you think that is it just a narrative build? Even the fights, let us know what you think of the fights. We've just sat and had a good chat about 289. But if you want to let us know what you think, drop in the comments and let us know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the judging element of the game as well, like all the Kai Kara France. I know, obviously, a lot of people said that Kai Kara France won, but you know, it'd be interesting to hear people's opinions on.
Yeah, if you think he lost, let us know, because genuinely, I watch it late. I am tired.
And I've only watched it once. Yeah.
If it's a case that everyone's saying, look, it's closer than you fucking thought, man. Watch it again. You're watching it for supporting Kai as opposed to the other way around. It's not a problem. It's not like I'm putting my flag in it. I just want to know how anyone else saw it.
And I was watching it whilst I was kind of doing other stuff.
There you go.
Which is maybe what the judges were doing as well. So
What's that judge doing? Rolling a cone. Don't do that. Don't do that. Stop a minute. We need to watch this fight. But yeah, so interesting. But just to let you guys know as well, that their sponsors are, as always, New Shirt. Jump onto newshirt.co.uk. There's so many new bits and bobs on there. There's the Street Fighter collection, Turtles collection. There's a few Star Wars ones coming out. They told me they're going to be sending some stuff over, but unfortunately we're both wearing hoodies at the minute because it's too cold.
Yeah, it's June.
For just a shirt. But yeah, jump on, have a look, and obviously also buy a full Reptile. The camo was restocked slightly. So we got a restock on a number of items. If you missed out on the hoods and the joggers, I think the hoods may be gone again. There may be one left. I'm not sure. If I'm wrong, I apologise. I know this is not going to go out till Friday, so it might be that someone bought one right now. But the joggers are restocked and they're so popular, so soft and comfortable. So if you are missing out and you haven't got a pair of joggers, jump on and have a look. And leave me a note in your order. I always appreciate reading you guys' insanity.
Yeah.
It's nice.
And also, I know obviously most of you guys are already tuned into the main channel, but before the fights this weekend, we got the Picks podcast out with Veronica and Dan. And also there's two war rooms up, one on the main event, one on the co-main event. So, yeah, go check those out before the weekend.
Yeah, jump on, man. Get involved and let us know what you think. Any comments or thoughts, let us know what we should be watching and what we should be focusing on for next week. Cheers, guys.
Cool. Nice awesome, one, man.
Take it easy, dude.
In a bit.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.